The Ruthless Truth with Ruth Beltran and friends. Stay tuned.
You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 Bradenton. The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. These opinions or views do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, Fogartyville, our staff, or volunteers.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your life.
Hello, Suncoast, and welcome back to another episode of The Ruthless Truth. I'm your host today, Ira, and we have a very important episode today. But first, let's get into the real true update. Manatee County Commissioners are discussing a MAGA-backed proposal requiring nonprofits receiving county funding to verify the legal status of the people they serve. Nonprofits that don't comply could lose that funding, which supports programs such as early childhood development, college readiness, shelters, dental care, sexual assault advocacy, and addiction recovery. Evelyn Alam-Devar, executive director of Unidos Now, a nonprofit whose mission is to elevate the quality of life for Latinos in the region, said her organization does not ask about legal status and would reconsider accepting county funding if it were required to do so. Unidos Now has an application pending for more than $100,000 to support its Future Leaders Academy, a college and career readiness program for high school students. Alam-Devar said requiring nonprofits to collect immigration information could undermine trust and discourage families from participating, effectively creating what she described as a registry that could put them in danger. Manatee County Commissioners discussed Commissioner Amanda Ballard's proposal during yesterday's 9 a.m. public meeting at the Manatee County Administration Building. A member of the public gave their public statement. I am 100% against requiring mostly volunteers of nonprofits to spend their valuable time tracking down documents of hungry kids. The Boys Club should not be required to turn kids away. We should be helping all hungry kids. We definitely should not be forcing these organizations to wade into the complicated task of verifying status. We should be helping kids and single moms, anyone that needs help. Please do the right thing. Reject misinformation. Let the nonprofits focus on their mission. Pushing immigrants out of every aspect of public life, opportunity, and basic dignity is part of the white supremacist assault on the peaceful working class families who are overwhelmingly people of color. They will say it's just enforcement of the law with no concern for how it will affect the lives of thousands of already struggling families. Now, obviously, we condemn this racist proposal. In national news, socialist response to Trump's televised address on the Iran war. Trump promised genocidal destruction of the Iranian people in a speech where he was cited saying, "We're going to hit extremely hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to bring them back to the Stone Ages where they belong." In his anger and desperation to bring about something that can be passed off as a U.S. victory, Trump is pledging the wholesale destruction of Iran and its people. The bombing has already been horrific, targeting civilian infrastructure and massacring people in every corner of the country. Now Trump has told the public it will intensify to new heights and somehow bring about the swift conclusion of the war. The promise that victory is right around the corner is a hallmark of U.S. military quagmires over the decades. Compared to previous wars of aggression, the Trump administration put very little effort into preparing public opinion ahead of launching the attack on Iran and did not even bother to communicate a set of goals at the onset, despite using U.S. taxpayer money to fund the massive war machine he has unleashed on the country and also using taxpayer dollars to pay for the weapons Israel is using in this war. Trump did not feel it was necessary to even explain to the public why he was initiating this conflict. Without evidence and contrary to his claim last year that to have obliterated Iran's nuclear program, Trump claimed that the war on Iran was necessary to ensure the country would not develop nuclear weapons. Iran has always denied that its nuclear program had a military component, but the country does retain enriched nuclear material in several locations across the country, which presumably constituted to the supposed threat that Trump identified at the start of the war. But in a shocking reversal, Trump told Reuters, "I don't care about that. There is no threat to the U.S. public from Iran. In fact, for years, Iran gave international inspectors access to its nuclear facilities to prove that no weapons development was taking place. In opinion polls and demonstration in the streets, it has been apparent since the beginning that the people of the United States reject this war. Trump ran for office promising to be the president of peace, taking advantage of widespread public opposition to forever wars in the Middle East. Now he's presiding over a massive regional war of his own creation, a war he is now threatening to deepen. Amid a spiraling cost of living crisis and record inequality, we need to take a clear stand and demand that the public's money be used to meet human needs, not so death and destruction in Iran while making executives at weapon manufacturers even richer." All right, time to get into our show. We will now be talking about the No King's Day protest that happened on March 28th, quite possibly the largest protest yet in modern history, and it involved 8 million people and took place in all 50 states. I am joined by a local organizer, Matilda. Welcome to the show, Matilda.
Hi, Ira. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. There were 5,000 people who came out to protest the No King's Day protest in Sarasota alone. Now, you went to just one of these events in Sarasota, so tell me how the turnout was.
Yeah, so I'm not so good at looking at crowds and guessing how many people are there, but I think the other organizer who was with me, Alan, thought maybe something like 1,000 people were present where we were. There might have been even more earlier in the day when they were gathered in the park before walking out to Washington Boulevard. But it's always really encouraging and invigorating to attend events like this. The energy was really high. It was really good. In Sarasota, you can sort of feel like you are in a conservative hellscape and you can feel isolated. So attending No King's protests, attending demonstrations in general are really uplifting experiences because you see people who are chanting, people who are holding signs, honking in support. It's really energizing and uplifting.
As someone who, you know, grew up in Bradenton, I believe it. Yeah, it can be really great to see that people actually care about these things. Now, what was the energy of the crowd like? What issues were people talking and chanting about?
I did see a lot of posters and people in support of everything you could think of. I saw a lot of people in support of LGBTQ rights, which, as we know, are under attack, women's rights, reproductive rights, among others. I saw a lot of people who were talking about the billionaire class as well. So I did see a lot of people who sort of had identified wealth inequality as being the main issue here. And so we were there to sort of talk about the Iran situation and guide the conversation in that area. I didn't see a lot of people who were there for that particular reason outside of one group that is another local organized group that was demonstrating specifically against the actions unfolding in Iran at this present moment. But when asked, a lot of people, of course, were in support of our point of view.
Wonderful. Yeah, and it's definitely a great thing that you're able to engage and have those discussions. What other topics came up when you were talking to people? Did you have any good, really good conversations at the event?
Lots of really good conversations. There were a lot of people, I should also mention, who were very vocally against ICE. So we did have a lot of conversations like that. Like I said, we were trying to sort of gauge people's reaction to the situation in Iran. So we were asking directly about that. And also we were talking about general strike and asking directly about general strike. So some of the conversations that we had that stuck out to me were people who were self-identifying as being socialist or at the very least agreeing with socialist theory and policies.
You love to see it, don't you?
Yeah.
We love to see it. Now, I was also, well, one last topic I wanted to ask. Did you get a gauge on how people were feeling about the current affordability crisis, particularly with the energy crisis that's going on right now?
Absolutely. Like I said, that was something that did come up quite organically. I mean, and we were very open about who we were, you know, that we were with the Party for Socialism and Liberation. And so we were wearing our shirts. That wasn't a secret. So people did feel very comfortable, it seemed, talking to us about socialism. And like I said, identifying in that direction when talking with us. And I saw a woman who had an umbrella that said, eat the rich on it. You know, it's kind of become a popular phrase that I've seen people, even people who don't identify as socialists, I see a lot of people adopting, you know, these terms of phrase. So when you're in a crowd and you're trying to talk to people, you sort of look for those, I guess, like visual cues, those visual identifiers. I saw a woman with a Bernie shirt, so I knew right away I would have a good conversation with her. And it's stuff like that you see sort of organically happening at these events.
Absolutely. For the people who were not there that day, didn't make it out to the protest, what is really one big takeaway from the event that you would like to leave our listeners with?
I'll say this. There were not a small number of people who I talked to that day who happened upon it by accident or didn't plan on going at all. And they were just walking around downtown. A girl, a young, like high school age, was saying, she was at the movies, and when she came out, this was happening, you know. And then there were some people who were from out of town. A lot of conversations that we had were from people who aren't from the Sarasota area, but they were just happening there, and they decided to join. They made, you know, people made signs, makeshift out of nothing, you know, go to the CVS down the corner, buy a poster board. So it's really easy to, you know, just join in. And if you're feeling scared or feeling discouraged, don't let that sort of stop you from doing it if that's something that you want to do, if it's your desire. There was another conversation I had with some young folks, college age, were saying, you know, they said, I don't pay attention to the news that much anymore. And that's a sentiment that I hear a lot, just in conversations that I have day to day. And I do get it, and I do understand that inclination. But we always talk about revolutionary optimism. We always reinforce that. And I think for people who were not there that day, I would just say that it just takes one time, and you feel that energy that I was talking about earlier. You feel that sort of like uplift, that support, and it makes you want to go again. And then the next one you go to, maybe you sign a petition or you sign up for PSL, you know, whatever it is, it's just sort of the gateway, I think, to your activist journey. So the next time you hear about one going on, just join in. Just, it's so easy. Just do it.
Absolutely. It's the first step. That's the first step for most of us. We go to a protest, and there's definitely going to continue to be opportunities for people to keep going out to things. Now, there's a lot of reasons to get involved in this movement right now. You know, after lying to the country, saying that he would be a president of peace, Trump has launched yet another war of aggression in the Middle East. Thousands of people in Iran, Lebanon, and neighboring countries have been killed, and the global economy is in chaos right now. This is an illegal war that's all about Trump's desire to control the whole world and has nothing to do with keeping us safe. Now, Trump is trying to get Congress to give him $200 billion to pay for his way. But what our tax dollars should really be used for are things like healthcare, housing, and creating good jobs. You know, like, why is our money going to hurting people around the world? You know, it is clearer than ever that the majority of people in this country are opposed to Trump's agenda of racism, war, and attacks on working families. You know, King's Day's massive demonstrations across the whole country is proof of this. We have to ask ourselves, what is the next step? It is to make the people's opposition impossible to ignore with a general strike that shuts down work, school, and shopping. So you may have heard on May 1st, unions, community groups, progressive organizations of all kinds are gearing up for another powerful day of protest. And we need to turn this protest into a general strike. Now, ICE's war on our immigrant neighbors is still continuing. Airports across the country are new targets for Trump's secret police. This is a brutal, violent, racist agency that cannot be reformed. There shouldn't be a funding deal in Congress from the Department of Homeland Security that doesn't roll back ICE's powers. But that alone won't be enough. We need to go out and demand the abolition of ICE once and for all. And the last big reason we all got to get involved is that Trump is doing nothing for this affordability crisis that we are in right now. This is the number one issue facing working families. But does Trump care? Nope. He is a billionaire that serves only other billionaires. They don't have to worry about the price of groceries or healthcare or housing like the rest of us. The ultra-rich and corporations get massive tax breaks, but ordinary people get nothing from this administration. We need a nationwide price freeze, universal health care, and a massive job program to address this. There are a lot of different reasons people have come out to these protests. Now, one may think that that means that the protests are unfocused, but it's actually a huge strength for the movement. We are going to need a broad coalition of people coming together to fight against this right-wing administration. Every time we do mass actions, the working class builds a belief that people are willing to mobilize. A general strike gives that focus. When the working class withholds its labor, that's when it becomes clear where the true power lies in society if we become organized. But it's not a moment. It's a process. For one, we keep doing this so we can exercise our muscles as organizers. You know, Matilda, that's why we got to get out there. For another, if we continue to organize mass actions, people who sit on the sidelines get inspired to join in on the next one. And lastly, mass actions are an opportunity to radically shift the consciousness. For example, the George Floyd uprising suddenly made it so that the idea of abolishing the racist police system was no longer some extreme fringe notion, and it became an ideal for thousands of people who were inspired to take action for the very first time in their lives. Organizations across the country are coming together this upcoming May Day, that's May 1st, to fight back in the form of a general strike. But let's break it down for them, Matilda. What is a general strike? Would you let us know?
General strike is when people walk off the job and boycott school and shopping to make it clear who really makes society run. The prospect of a nationwide shutdown terrifies the billionaire class, and it's what can really stop Trump in his tracks.
Now, why are people calling for us to do this on May Day?
May Day is significant because of its importance in working class history. May Day started right here in the United States in 1886 and came from the struggle for the 8-hour workday.
And I'm so excited for this upcoming one because I think it's going to be a doozy. Now, we've talked about all the things that it's important that we do. Let's briefly talk about what we cannot do, all right? We cannot allow Democrats to funnel this energy into voting for the same do-nothing candidates and effectively kill the people's movement like they have done in the past. You know, when the Black Lives Matter uprisings happening, a lot of that energy and momentum was sucked up into the Democratic Party. Now, what do we have to show for that? we also cannot become cynical. We cannot allow ourselves to become dispirited by the lack of immediate sudden change. We know that change takes work and time, and if anything, it should motivate us to get more involved and to struggle even harder for the movement. And most importantly, most of all, we cannot just go back to watching from the sidelines. You were out there for the No Kings protest. Mm-hmm. The work is not done. Keep those signs. You're going to need them. All right. We need to see you out in the streets again and again and again until we win. So that's why I'm so excited for this upcoming May Day. Now, I've actually been feeling very inspired by the PSL Action Network's recent webinar hosted by Karina Garcia. So, Matilda, let's listen to this very exclusive pan clip.
For those of us who were pulled in from this struggle over the years and over the course of our participation in different party initiatives, we came to understand the importance of the party, not just different nonprofits and service organizations or mutual aid groups, but the actual party in advancing the struggle to unite our class across all of the issues. And to keep it independent, so important, to keep it independent of both parties, to not give away our leverage and our strength to build some type of goodwill. Like, what more goodwill do they need? We already feed them. We do everything for them. What other promises do we have to make to them? To the contrary, they are the ones who owe us. They are the ones who owe our families, who would be nothing without us. And yet they keep us, they take us for granted. I say this because in our interventions and actions right now, we're going to come across the same types of people, people who want to do something for their communities. These are our future comrades. And the more that we connect with them and talk with them about what's going on and how we're intervening collectively to advance the struggle, the more likely that they're going to stick around and grow in ways that they never imagined. And, you know, many young people who got involved in 2006, for instance, became the frontline activists who won DACA. You know, DACA wasn't everything, but it provided some sort of relief for dreamers who had come into this country as undocumented children. Everything in our country, everything has been won through struggle, everything. And this brings me to May Day. We're expecting big demonstrations in several cities, including Chicago, where May Day all started. It's essential that we all know this history that has been stolen from us and erased in our education system. They want us to believe that immigrants and citizen workers can't unite. They want us to believe that the struggle is pointless. But the history of May Day shows something completely different. I hope everyone knows the story of the 8-hour workday, how it was won through sweat and blood of the working class, the whole working class, including immigrants. The struggle for the 8-hour workday goes all the way back to the Civil War, where working 12 and 14 hours a day was a norm. A huge backlash was launched against immigrants, leftists, against labor unions and civil liberties. There was a period of intense repression and mass firings. And then when May Day ended up being celebrated all over the world as the 8-hour day was finally won, it never got official recognition here in the United States. Still, May Day didn't come back in the United States really until 2006. The immigrant workers brought it back, and because labor unions had woken up to the fact that you have to organize immigrants and U.S.-born workers in common unions instead of organizing against immigrants. The labor unions came back into May Day as well. This was a huge development for putting back on the table our own revolutionary history, for showing our common power to go on strike, and for the possibility of uniting workers of all nationalities. We live in a very segregated society where groups are set against each other, feeling isolated, powerless. But when the working class begins to move, when people start talking about uniting, when people start to discuss defending our immigrant brothers and sisters, whenever that happens, we see each time that May Day starts to make a comeback. It happened in 2006. It happened in Minnesota just a few months back. We can make it happen again. Once people lose their fear, the working class ultimately is more powerful than any other force in society. Thank you.
All right. Man, I love hearing Karina Garcia speak. She always, I always learn something new every single time.
Yeah, really well said, all of it. I mean, it really is so important to know our history, to know where these movements got their start, and sort of not be complacent, push it forward. There's so much more work to do. You know, the 8-hour workday is, for the time, revolutionary concept, but, you know, we can do more. We can push for a 30-hour work week. We can push for higher wages. We can push for stronger union presence in every single workplace so that every single person feels represented and feels like they have a say in the labor process, in the things that they need from their work, because we all have to work.
Absolutely. Like you said, it's important to learn about our history.
Testing.
I really like that she talked about the importance of immigrants in the labor struggle.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so important to involve everyone at every single level of the labor movement, regardless of their status, because, like I said, we all have to work. We're all working. And if, you know, we don't stand together, there's more of us than there are of them. And without all of us, every single one of us can overcome
the right-wing billionaire agenda.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, we can't organize without immigrants. There's never been a labor struggle in this country that wasn't one without uniting different groups of people together. And, you know, I also really loved what she talked about, why we need a party, a political party, and not just a protest. Now, you're a member of a party yourself. Maybe you could expand a little bit on the importance of a party.
Certainly, yeah. Being in a party means that, I mean, it's community, it's camaraderie. It's able to drive your focus in a clear and precise way that you cannot do on your own. The whole point of this is to organize, right? And how do we do that without, you know, organization, without collective? This is a collective movement, so we can't do this on our own. So, you know, it doesn't matter really which organization you join. And a lot of the times these, you know, organizations can collaborate together, and that's important too. So.
Absolutely. It's there. We need a party to accomplish our goals. And for our listeners, if now is not the right time for you to join a party, you can still educate yourself and get more wonderful content like the clip me and Matilda just listened to. If you join the PSL Action Network, you'll be able to listen to webinars like this all the time. They'll send you the recordings of it with great educational material. It will basically teach you how to use socialist talking points in your daily life. You'll receive things like posters and stickers that will to show, you know, your support of such movements. So it's a really great thing, and it's a really great way to get into the movement and help build the socialist movement, even if you're not ready to join an org just yet.
I have my General Strike sticker right on my water bottle that I use at work every day. In one of the last mail things, I got a poster that says "Ice Out," and it's hanging in my studio where I do my work, right above my computer, so I get to see it every single day. So those little things that they throw in the mail are so awesome, and you can use them to like show people like what you're all about. So I love that.
Thank you so much for that. Absolutely. A perfect example of, you know, how these things, like, they're conversation starters. They're great. I love them.
Yeah. And then I'll say too that you get access to so much content, like you were saying, and also the workshops and the webinars and everything that you have access to. They are so amazing, so well put together. The conversations that you have are really informative, and it's something that you can take with you out into the world, and you can talk to people. You feel like you are more well-versed in all of the talking points, and you can, in real time, combat disinformation with the things that you learn through the material that's provided in the Action Network.
Unfortunately, this is all the time we have, Dave, for our interview, but that was such a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much for joining us today, Matilda.